Good afternoon, members. The Health and Human Service members, the committee meeting is starting. The Health and Human Services Committee will come to order. Members, please remember to turn on your microphone when answering roll call, and please turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices. Everybody's looking. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Burton.
Here.
Representatives Altman. Benjamin. Botana.
Here.
Caruso is excused. Davis.
Here.
Duran is excused. Garrison.
Here.
Grant.
Here.
Foster.
Here.
Pasulo.
Here.
Mello.
Here.
Persons Malika.
Here.
Rayner.
Here.
Rizzo.
Here.
F. Robinson.
Here.
W. Robinson.
Here.
Cerulli.
Here.
Skidmore.
Here.
Tant.
Here.
Yarbrough.
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, Cheryl. And again, just that friendly reminder to everybody in the room to please turn off your electronic devices. Just wanted to take a moment. I understand that in our audience today, we have our Doctor of the Day here in the legislature. Dr. Dominique DeLorenzo is here visiting us from Orlando and taking care of everybody in the building. Thank you, Dr. Lorenzo. All right, members, we have five bills, and the order's going to be, we've got a couple of members who are needed in other committees. You know, we're hitting that busy time, so we're going to take those members first and then go down the list numerically after that. So actually, even numerically, we'll start with HB 17, podiatric medicine. By Representative Bell. Representative Bell, you are recognized to present the bill.
Can you hear me now? Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate you allowing me to present this great bill. It's House Bill 17, Podiatric Medicine. It's going to clean up Florida Statute 416, which has been 10 years in the making. My bill will make the following changes. It will create a section of law in Florida Statute 461 dealing with the acts and duties of podiatric assistants. This includes the practice of podiatry to direct health care agreements, and also modifies the requirements for instructions on controlled substances prescribing. This is my bill, House 117-2, that was here last year. So we're back again with it. So, and that is my bill, Chairman. Chair.
Thank you, members. Do we have any questions for Representative Bell? Okay, see no questions, we have no amendments. Any public testimony on this bill? We do, we have a couple. Christopher Hansen, Florida Podiatric Medical Association, waves in support. Jason Nguyen, Florida Podiatric Medical Association, waves in support. And Stephen Nguyen, Florida Osteopathic Medical Association, and he supports the bill. Waves in support. I'm sorry. There it is. Waves in support. New forms. Okay. Members, we're on debate. Is there any debate on this bill? Okay. Seeing no debate, Representative Bell, would you like to close on your bill?
I wave.
Cheryl, please call the roll on HB 17 and announce the vote.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Benjamin? Botana?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Masula?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
F. Robinson?
Yes.
W. Robinson?
Yes.
Cerulli?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Yarbrough?
Yes.
Chair Burton?
Yes.
Yeas, 0 nays.
Show the bill reported favorably.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, I don't believe we have our next person who needed to be, that was Representative Plakin in the room. Is he behind the podium and I can't see him? Since he is not, We will go to Representative Wilhite. Representative Wilhite with HB 29. You are recognized to present the bill, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for allowing me to present House Bill 29, Dispensing Medicinal Drugs. This bill would allow, or under current law, the hospital is not allowed to discharge medications to you as you leave, or you're not allowed to take medications from the hospital. This bill would allow you, once to discharge from either an emergency room or as a floor patient, to be discharged with up to 48 hours or the next business day worth of medication, and during a time of state of emergency, up to 72 hours worth of medication. This continuing your care as you leave, whether you're too tired or sick or ill to get to the pharmacy, there's a wait at the pharmacy. The pharmacy may not have the medication and needed right away. This would help you to get you through, again, those next couple of days. That is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions for Representative Wilhite? Okay, we see no questions. We have no amendments. Public testimony. We have Etta Fernandez, who waves in support. Barney Bishop. Is Mr. Bishop here? Mr. Bishop is a proponent of the bill. Stephen Nguyen waves in support. Philip Suderman waves in support. Joseph Meenan waves in support. Okay, members, we are now in debate on the bill. Is there any debate on this bill? See no debate. Representative Wilhite, would you like to close on your bill?
I'll waive close, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Cheryl, please call the roll on HB 29 and announce the vote.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Benjamin? Botana?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Missoula?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Persons Maluka?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
F. Robinson?
Yes.
W. Robinson?
Yes.
Cerulli?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Yarbrough?
Yes.
Chair Burton?
Yes.
Yes, 18 yeas, 0 nays.
Shall the bill be reported favorably?
Thank you, Madam Chair and colleagues.
Okay, members, let us go to HB 133 by Representative Harding.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Harding, you're recognized to present the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. Today, I'm in front of you talking about House Bill 133. This is titled The Surrender of Newborn Infants. This bill serves as an expansion of Florida's safe haven law, which allows parents to surrender newborn infants at hospitals and fire stations. This bill offers a unique option for parents to surrender their newborn infant without having to interact with another person, thus fully protecting his or her anonymity. This bill also extends the age that a newborn can be surrendered without the parent being charged with abandonment from 7 to 30 days. And I would say that the only caveat there is unless there's obvious signs of abuse. So, Madam Chair, that is the bill.
Members, are there any questions for Representative Harding on this bill? Representative Skidmore, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I actually have questions on the amendment. I just realized.
Okay. On the bill, Representative Davis, do you have a question on the bill? You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Harding, the question I have for you is with the baby box and with the child being dropped off, who takes on that liability? Is it the local, I guess, fire department that's handling the situation? Who incurs the liability for this situation?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the liability would be exactly the same way it is now under the current safe haven laws. So there is liability protection for the first responder unless there was obvious sign of neglect. But that child actually would be the responsibility of the Department of Children and Families one, just like it would if the child was handed to a firefighter at the fire station. So it would follow the same exact guidelines we already have.
Additional questions on the bill? Okay, we have one amendment. The amendment is number 632639 by Representative Harding. Representative Harding, you're recognized to explain the amendment.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. So this amendment requires the Department of Health to review and approve newborn infant safety devices for the use by hospitals, emergency medical service stations, or fire stations, and grants the Department of Health general rulemaking authority to implement the review and approval process. And I would compare that, just one extra point on that, is that it would be very similar to how ambulances are actually regulated by the actual physical, by the Department of Health. So one of the questions I've gotten asked was, what's a comparable? And that's the best I can find at the moment.
Okay, questions on the amendment. Representative Skidmore, do you have a question on the amendment? You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you so much, Rep. Harding, for spending some time with me. When we spoke earlier, I thought I understood that that the alarm that alarms when the baby is put in the box goes directly to a 911 operator. But I don't see that in the amendment. It looks like it's an alarm inside the building. So I just wanted some clarification on who's getting the alarm. And if I kind of liked the idea that 911 was alerted, but if it's just an alarm inside the building, I feel like there's more chance for it to maybe be faulty. So I just wanted to get some clarification on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Harding, you're recognized. I'm not sure that that's within your amendment, but if you'd like to go ahead and answer the question, please do.
So I will circle back to you on the amendment language on the alarm inside the building, but within the bill, there's still an alarm that does alert the 911 dispatch.
So for clarity, it does not change the bill?
Correct. Thank you, Madam Chair. Correct.
Thank you. Additional questions on the amendment? Representative Masullo?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hardy, is there any direction to the Department of Health on, as they review and approve these devices, how long, on average, the infant will be left unattended before those devices are then checked and collected?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a time specifically on that. I can tell you we've tried this on one of the boxes where we opened it and did the alert process, and it was very quick because if you note within the bill, this has to be a 24-hour operative facility. So the response time should be very quick, but I don't have an time to your question. I don't have an exact answer, but I would again just point to the 24-hour operative facility.
Additional questions on the amendment? Okay, do we have any public testimony on the amendment? Okay. Thank you. So the amendment adopted without objection. We are now back on the bill as amended. Any more questions on the bill? Representative Skidmore, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks again, Rep. Harding. So some of my concerns are around liability, but as amended, is the bill, it's optional for fire stations and hospitals to adopt this practice. Is that correct?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, so this is not a mandate. This local municipality, a local fire station could work with their government, whether it be a city or county, and decide to do this. But it's not a mandate. So this would be their choice to decide to do this.
Thank you. Follow-up, Madam Chair?
You're recognized, yes.
Thank you very much. And so one of the questions I had, and I think you've kind of mentioned it, is if the infant were placed in the box and was already deceased without any, because of anonymity, there wouldn't be any surveillance, is there an additional layer of liability, or how does that impact? Is it then a crime scene? You know, I have concerns about what happens to the facility at that point, and in a very tragic situation, but just still have some concerns for the facility at that point.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would point to the same thing that would happen if, and I do hypotheticals, but I think it's a good example, if a homeless person was sleeping in front of the station and passed away. This would be very similar to that. You know, they're within the building, any fire station I've ever been to, and definitely with the new ones, they have a lot of surveillance cameras. You know, if you walk up to a fire station, the roll-up doors are open. And when I was campaigning, I would go to fire stations and collect petitions. And you won't get 2 or 3 feet past the open roll-up door without someone, you know, seeing you and coming to you. That's because you're on camera. And so the point of this bill is that we're not going to press charges or go after those parents unless there's an obvious sign, just like exactly how it is under the current law, unless there's obvious sign of abuse. So there still will be surveillance cameras in some capacity because the building has to be able to operate safely. We're not saying that they can't do that. What we're saying is the only time that would ever be used would be if it was an obvious sign of abuse and we need to try to find those parents and figure out what's going on.
Additional questions on the bill? Representative Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Under the assumption and in your conversation, reporting, you talked about this baby box has to be at a 24-hour operating facility. And I guess, you know, taking into account that a lot of our hospitals and our fire stations are operating in, you know, 24/7, what happens in the case when the alarm system goes off and you don't have anyone at a fire station because they're off on a run to answer this alarm with the baby box?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so it would be very similar to if someone broke into your home and an alarm goes off, the security company is going to call you, and then if they don't get a hold of you, they're going to notify 911. In this case, dispatch would know. And so there's already going, the fact this box has been open, it's already going to be out there bigger and farther than that station. So just like if your alarm goes off at your house, they alert the closest, you know, patrolling deputy. In this case, it would be something similar to that because that's why it's so important that this alert goes beyond that building.
Follow up?
You're recognized, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going along these same lines, a deceased child placed in the baby box. Now this is not an everyday scene. This is now potentially a crime scene. How is that handled or the intent of this bill with that situation?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will point to examples we have in other states. There's 4 other states that have very similar guidelines to these. And in those states, in Indiana in particular, which has the most, there's been 10 children surrendered in the box since 2017. And all of those children, as far as we're aware, have gone on and lived a normal life in some capacity. So your concern is warranted, and I think it would be very similar to if someone brought a dead child and handed it to a firefighter. You know, there will be a recourse, and there's going to have to be an investigation, just like what I was discussing with Representative Skidmore. So your point is definitely a good point, but I think that in that scenario, it's going to have to be a case-by-case basis on how that prosecutor or how that, you know, court decides to move forward. But it would be the same way as if a child was left abandoned at the front door of the fire station and that dead, and that unfortunately has happened.
Okay. Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Additional question?
Yes.
You're recognized.
Rep. Harding, you talked about the other states that the baby box is implemented in. Are there vendors throughout the state? How many vendors deal with this type of equipment?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I know of 2 currently. This bill does not require a certain vendor. This bill sets forth a safety guideline that any of the vendors could choose to move forward. And again, that would be up to the local municipality that would decide who they want to work with specifically to install the device. So this is not a vendor, you know, bill to direct it one way or the other.
Thank you.
Representative Skidmore, you have an additional question? You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your indulgence. Rep. Harding, I don't find the language about 911 in the bill or the amendment. So would you be amenable to working with me and making sure that that is part of the overall package that you're doing here?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, I will circle back with you and we'll get an answer to you here this afternoon or this in the morning.
Members, do we have additional questions for Representative Harding? Okay, seeing none, public testimony. On the bill, yeah. Okay, this is testimony on the bill, now was amended. Barney Bishop is your proponent. Andrew Shervell. You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And good afternoon, Chairwoman Burton and committee members. I guess if I have to hike here, I'm going to speak a little bit, not just wave in support. my name is Andrew Shervell, and I'm the executive director of Florida Voice for the Unborn, which, for those of you who are not aware, is a pro-life lobbying group here based in Tallahassee. And Florida Voice for the Unborn strongly supports HB 133 as amended. And there's three important reasons why we support it. Number one, Ocala was the first city in Florida back in December to install a baby box, because there's nothing in Florida law that actually prohibits their use. And so municipalities already are demonstrating an interest in installing these baby boxes. So it would be wise of the Florida legislature to get out in front of this. I also know of at least one other municipality that's interested in doing this, regardless of whether this bill passes or not. But we're hoping and praying that this bill is going to pass this year. So I think these municipalities and private entities such as hospitals should have clear guidelines and requirements from the state so that baby boxes are uniform throughout Florida. This doesn't mean that these entities need to use the same vendor, but rather that all baby boxes should have the same safety requirements. Number two, we support this bill because modern-day baby boxes are entirely safe. I haven't seen, personally, a single account of a baby being harmed in any way by being placed in one of these 50 or so current safe haven baby boxes that are in these other four states. But I do know that here in Florida, we've had 32 abandoned children who have perished since 2000, since the installation of our safe haven law. These baby boxes are just another option to save them. I think these safety requirements in the bill are state of the art. And number three, finally, we support this bill because HB 133 is revenue neutral. The state of Florida is not involved with funding the baby boxes at all. So in conclusion, I'd like to thank Representative Harding for sponsoring this bill and for the committee members, Representative Altman and Representative Persons Mulika, for co-sponsoring this great, wonderful bill. So please, members, for the sake of Florida's innocent newborn children, vote today in favor of HB 133. Thank you, and may God bless you all.
Thank you. Ingrid Delgado waves in support. Okay, members, we're now in debate on the bill. Do we have any debate on the bill? Okay, seeing no debate, Representative Harding, would you like to close on your bill?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'll make it brief. You know, when we approach a legislator and, you know, you campaigned for a couple of years on this, and you imagine why are you coming here? And I think one of the questions you have to ask with every bill that you see is, what's the problem and what are we trying to solve? And with this particular bill, it was mentioned in the public testimony, but there's been over, since safe haven laws have existed in Florida, there's been over 62 children unsafely abandoned, and over half of those perished. And when we, that's an issue that we need to look to solve it. And when we look to solve it, we can point to other states and the data that we do have. And the states that have done this, they haven't seen a spike in anonymous abandonment. What they've seen is that brings awareness to a law that we have, these safe haven laws, and that parents that are in these situations can surrender their child and hopefully get their child out of a bad situation. But there still is the case where a mother is in an abusive relationship, or all the different scenarios that us sitting in this room may have a hard time imagining to bring yourself to that point. But it does happen, and it is an issue. When we have a 50% death rate, we've got to do something to try to address it. And to me, this is the best option that we have. And so with that, Madam Chair, I'll close.
Thank you, Cheryl. Please call the roll on HB 133 and announce the vote.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Benjamin? Botana?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Masula?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
F. Robinson?
Yes.
W. Robinson?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Yarborough?
Yes.
Chair Burton?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
Show the bill reported favorably as amended.
Thank you.
Okay. Looks like we have Representative Plakin with us. Representative Plakin, you're recognized to present HB 725.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, and thank you for hearing this bill today. In 2019, 6,808 Floridians died due to opioid overdoses. By this time tomorrow, another almost a couple dozen Floridians will be dead of this problem, and another couple dozen families will be devastated. To try to address at least part of the problem, two sessions ago, I filed House Bill 451, which required doctors to provide information to patients indicating that there are alternatives to opioids that can be used for pain management.
Excuse me, Representative Plakin, I know the microphone's on. Could you get a little bit closer to it?
Sure.
There we go. That's better.
Can I keep going, or would you like me to start again?
Continue. Thank you.
In an attempt to address at least part of the problem, two sessions ago, I filed House Bill 451, which required doctors to provide information to patients indicating that there are alternatives to opioids that can be used for pain management and anesthesia. The legislation passed unanimously, and Governor DeSantis signed it into law. Last session, I filed House Bill 743 that exempted hospice providers. It passed unanimously, and Governor DeSantis signed it into law. This bill modifies the existing requirements on practitioners by allowing them to provide patients with an electronically transmitted copy of the DOH pamphlet as an alternative to a printed pamphlet. That's the bill.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions for Representative Plakin? Okay, seeing no questions. We have no amendments. Public testimony. Christopher Newland, Florida Chapter, American College of Physicians. Waves in support. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, is a proponent. Robert Stewart, Change Everything. Doing business of Project Opioid, waves in support. Amy Lyon, Florida Academy of Family Physicians, waves in support. Stephen Nguyen, Florida Osteopathic Medical Association, waves in support. Alexandra Abood, Florida Dental Association, waves in support. Joseph Meenan, Florida Hospital Association, waves in support. Members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on this bill? Okay. Seeing no debate, Representative Plakin, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you. When fires were threatening Philadelphia in 1736, Ben Franklin famously said, "An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure," meaning at the time that prevention of fire is much better than having to put them out later on. This bill, starting 2 years ago, and I think concluding probably now, is one of the first proactive approaches that we've had to solving the opioid crisis. We have lots of reactive bills and legislations, which are good things. We need those. But I think we can, those would include, you know, the criminal justice code, drug laws, and everything in an attempt to solve it. This being a proactive approach, I think we could all be proud that we're doing something to attack the problem up front, in addition to the measures we're using on the other side of it. So I appreciate your favorable support.
Cheryl, please call the roll on HB 725 and announce the vote.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Benjamin? Botana?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Mr. Lowe?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
F. Robinson?
Yes.
W. Robinson?
Yes.
Cerulli?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Yarborough?
Yes.
Chair Burton?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
Shall the bill reported favorably?
Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Buchanan, thank you for waiting patiently. Next up, we have House Bill 497 by Representative Buchanan. Representative, you're recognized to present the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, distinguished members of the committee. Some of you may be aware, but there's currently only one board certification exam written into state statute. This bill simply opens up statute to include Western Regional Examination Board examination to be permitted for certification in dentistry and allowing dentists and dental hygienists who are certified through REB to practice in the state of Florida. And this would encourage free markets, increase portability, and this may be a bill that sounds familiar to some of you. We did vote it off the floor last year and had great support in our last committee stop. So that's the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, do we have any questions for Representative Buchanan? Okay, seeing no questions, there are no amendments. We do have one public testimony card. This is Bruce Horn. Dr. Horn is a dentist, DDS. Dentist, Dr. Horn. You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's an honor to be here. Very briefly, what's this about? It's about protection of the public. Quite frankly, you know, the clinical licensure exam purpose is to eliminate applicants who are not sufficiently prepared for safe and into practice of dentistry. I'm a past board president in my state, and that's something that we hold dear to make sure that they are good to go when they have a license. To do this, we provide testing that includes validity. It measures what we intend to measure. It's reliable, which means that if a candidate were to take the REB exam at another location, they can expect the absolute same examination, same content, same administration. It's independent from the states that are authorizing those licenses, so there is no concern about that. And it's anonymous. What that means is that the grading examiners that actually do the scoring will never see the candidates. The candidates may be male, female, they may be of different ethnicities. However, there'll be no, the grading examiners will never know that. They will just see the candidates' patients. But most importantly, when states consider licensure, they want to be also certain that the results are defensible. There are always candidates and other entities that want to challenge the examination content or its administration. You know, defensibility is of utmost importance to states accepting these independent assessments for that reason. And essentially, can states stand behind the results? And that's what's before you. We at the Western Regional Board are asking to be joined into the existing statute to allow a pathway for licensure for candidates that actually take and prepare for that examination around the country and choose to want to come to Florida. States standing behind defensibility is not a new issue, but what I did want to say was that to date, and we have been examining dental students around the country since 1976, I'm director of dental exams for this agency and have been so for the past 10 years. These testing concerns have not been raised by any of the following groups: the American Association of Dental Boards, the American Dental Educator Association, the American Student Dental Association, or the American Dental Association. In fact, they assembled a national coalition for dental licensure reform to advocate for the removal of barriers to mobility in those states that currently do not accept results of all valid and reliable exams. By the way, there are five different clinical licensure exams in the United States. The other three are functioning as they are. The Western Regional Examining Board would like to be able to have portability again for their candidates moving here. The ADEX examination, which is currently given in the state, is also a valid and reliable examination and accepted around the United States, just like the Western Regional Examining Board. Some years ago, when Florida moved from giving its own dental exam to being an independent, to align themselves with an independent provider of results, that activity resulted in a contractual agreement with the ADEX agency to give that exam. I don't know that this has been challenged before, and there are other exams out there, including mine. Let me mention, too, there's no cost to the state of Florida for this amendment. The candidates pay a fee to be examined, and we're not asking for a replacement of the current testing examination in Florida. We're just asking, again, to join that, as we are in 40 other states around the country. You know, the activity that candidates have, candidates, fourth-year students moving around, is sometimes problematic for them, even including military spouses that are trying to move back to Florida, and they have to go through the activity of taking a second dental examination because there's only one accepted in the state. Having to take that second dental examination, if they choose to come here, and we hope that they do for you, to become an associate or to purchase a practice or to be involved in an existing practice, it's really somewhat outdated because most of the states around the country accept all the regional testing agencies and their examination results. Finally, I will say that these new dentists coming to Florida and other states are already burdened with debt almost to $400,000 on the average. It's very, very expensive, and that's probably private dental school tuition. Public school, probably around $300,000 to $350,000 of student debt. So we do try to give them an opportunity to go where they want to, but we would need your help.
Thank you. We have a question, Representative. If you don't mind, sir, Representative Tant, you're recognized for a question.
Allison, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just curious, have you worked with the Board of Dentistry here on this? And if so, have you guys reached an agreement on this? And if not, if you haven't worked with them, why not? So could you fill us in?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I gave a presentation to the Florida Board of Dentistry, I think it was 3 years ago, with the intent of providing them with information about the Western Regional Examining Board. I think it was a two-hour presentation. They were very kind. They listened intently. I did learn that in Florida, the Florida Board of Dentistry members are not permitted to be examiners. So my activity with them in speaking was a little detailed, more towards the examiner side of the content. I was told after the meeting by, I believe, the executive director, and I may have that wrong, that there was not much they could do because their testing association with ADEX was enveloped in statute. They appreciated my presenting, and I think there was an idea that the next time that came up again, that maybe we would be invited to present again. But I'm not sure I fully understood what that was at the time.
All right, thank you very much. One more question, at least one more. Representative Altman, you're recognized.
Yes, I have a question. You say these tests are exactly the same, but you talk about anonymity. Explain that to me. I don't. So they're not exactly the same. They're a different test?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The content of the examinations that are given by the four or five examining agencies are pretty similar. They include a comprehensive treatment planning exam of some kind. It's usually given at a prometric center. It includes a section on cavities and fillings. It includes a section on cosmetic crowns and so forth. The state dental boards anymore around the country are now looking to approve sections of the exam. And if the examination has these components, then they're accepting that regardless of the acronym. That's not what you asked me, but I'm getting to the anonymous part. The anonymous part, I was referencing the activity associated with grading the candidate's work on a patient. That patient is sent to a separate private area where the grading examiners that are previously calibrated to within 80% of each other, otherwise they can't be involved in this. We'll evaluate that candidate's worth, candidate's work according to a scoring rubric of some kind, and we all have them. So the anonymity is with the patients that are being treated by the candidates. Many, many years ago, even in my state in Oklahoma, there was no anonymity. The grading examiners were the same people that worked with the candidates. Unfortunately, I think some of this was done in prisons, some in dental schools. And if a candidate wore something that looked like they came from Alabama and they were trying to get licensed in Texas, it was very apparent because there was no anonymity. I'd probably be my best example.
Thank you. Do we have additional questions?
Yeah, one more. Just one more.
Excuse me. Representative Altman has another
question. So I'm curious in terms of anonymity. So a lot of these are clinical exams. So they're actually examiners that are witnessing prospective dentists doing physical work on a future patient. So they actually, the examiners see the patient, but they don't know who they are. Is that what you mean in terms of anonymity? And how is it different than what's being done now? What is being done now in relation to anonymity?
Thank you, Representative. You're recognized to answer the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not bringing in a new term that's unique to REB here when I say anonymity, along with the other collection of validity, reliable, independent, and anonymous. The anonymity that I'm referring to is probably exactly as you described. The anonymity is between the candidate. I mean, if we're in Delaware and your name is DuPont and you're taking a licensure exam and everyone is pretty much aware of that, I don't know. Maybe that would influence the grading examiners. So the grading examiners, the examiners that actually make the decision, they're content experts, and they make the decision on the appropriateness of the treatment, do not know who the candidate is. They just see the patient's treatment work. The patients are sent to another area, and they are blindly, if you will, evaluated with no respect to who the candidate might be by gender, ethnicity, or last name.
Thank you. Additional questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think that's all we have. We just had one speaker for public testimony. Members, we're now in debate on the bill. Debate on the bill. Seeing no debate, Representative Buchanan, would you like to close on the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will waive it.
Waive, okay. Cheryl, please call the, I was ready to let you speak. Cheryl, please call the roll on HB 497 and announce the vote.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Benjamin? Rotana?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
F. Robinson?
Yes.
W. Robinson?
Yes.
Cerulli?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Yarbrough?
Yes.
Chair Burton?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
Show the bill reported favorably.
Thank you.
Members, that's all the bills we have for today. So we have more coming. I thought it was a good idea to at least meet today and get what we had through our docket, so to speak, so that we could have more room for what we know is coming in future weeks. So this concludes our committee agenda. Representative Mello moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.